Welcome to Jaguars This Week. Jaguars This Week. Presented by Aetna. With the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton. Color analyst Jeff Lagerman. And Jaguars.com senior writer John Osher. Jaguars This Week is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Sonny's Barbecue, Wells Fargo, your local Jacksonville Teal Deals merchants, and by Everbank. Jaguars This Week begins right now.
All right, hello and welcome to Jaguars This Week post-draft. Lots to talk about. Brian Sexton, Jeff Lagerman, John Osher. Our entire cast here with you until 7 o'clock. You know the phone number, 355-NFL1. Obviously, we'll end up talking about the punter ad nauseum, but strange news. I don't know what to call it. Shocking. I know I was shocked when I saw that Junior Seau had died and then learned that it was a self-inflicted wound.
That's the report.
The police have confirmed it.
No, they?
Yeah, they have confirmed it, that he has shot himself in the chest. He has died. And I say this because he was such an ambassador for the game. I mean, people saw him as being one of those statesman-like players that, you know, went from, you know, Miami and New England and San Diego and all of that, but was a guy that was always, you know, NFL Network used, and he was, ESPN was a favorite of his. That part of it got me. What was your first reaction?
My first reaction is, you know, what a shame. I mean, a guy that really was the face of the league, the face of the Chargers for many years, and then played forever, obviously with the New England Patriots, and was chasing the dream of winning the Super Bowl. And then I heard that it was a self-inflicted chest wound, and my first reaction was Dave Duerson.
Mm-hmm.
Because most people don't commit suicide by shooting themselves in the chest. I mean, is this a guy who had, you know, brain trauma and was having issues with that and wanted to preserve the brain?
Right.
I don't know.
And we should remind people who Dave Duerson was, because there might be some casual listeners. You know, member of the Chicago Bears, great defense in the 80s, that Super Bowl championship team, a defensive back who shot himself in a similar fashion last year and left a note basically suggesting that he wanted his brain to be used for research on retired football players and brain damage.
And we were talking off the air, and, you know, you used the word shocking, and I said, you know, the scary thing is I wasn't shocked for the very reason that Jeff just mentioned, which was Dave Duerson. Now, I can't say I wasn't shocked. Obviously, you are when this happens. But that's your first thought, and your first thought is, does this connect? You know, it's not necessarily shock, but does this connect? And, you know, it's obviously way too early to speculate, and, you know, we don't have data or anything like that, but you can understand why the league is so concerned about concussions when you're starting to see this as, you know, something of a tragic mini trend.
Yeah, you know, you go back and you look at some of the guys in the league. I mean, Mike Webster was mm-hmm. one of the early examples of it. I mean, really had a hard time living.
Yeah.
Dave Duerson writes a note and wants his brain to be analyzed, and then Junior Seau commits suicide by shooting himself in the chest, supposedly. I mean, that's, you know, it makes you think.
Yeah, I mean, and as absurd as you think the kickoff rule was last year, and I don't know the numbers on if that reduced concussions or not, and as absurd as you think some of the rules were on defense last year, you know, you can certainly see why we're going through a period of trying to adjust something so that this can be curtailed somehow.
You know, it makes you wonder, you know, because, I mean, right now, league-wide, there's a huge lawsuit. I mean, mm-hmm. huge lawsuit.
1,100 players.
Yeah, 1,000-something players that are all, you know, suing the league for, you know, supposedly not telling them, you know. And the concussion study that I believe his name was Elliot Coleman was in charge of, who was the MD for the New York Jets when I was there, and started this case study on head injuries in the NFL. And excuse me if I get some of the details wrong, but, you know, his study came out and said there's really no evidence of it, but then all of a sudden the league started instituting some of these rules mm-hmm. as far as how to deal with concussions, and, you know, you wonder, was there something there that was just not being told?
Right.
You know, now you got Dave Duerson and Junior Seau makes you think, you know, Mike Webster's history, other players that supposedly, I know the linebacker for the New England Patriots.
The middle linebacker for Stephen from Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
Stephen Johnson, right? Was it Stephen Johnson?
Teddy Johnson.
I know somebody who knows him very well, is having a very difficult time living his life day to day. You know, so
Well, it just stands to reason. You get head injuries and play this violent game. You know, there is part of it, and you'd be the first to say, Jeff, that, you know, guys know what they're signing on for with the NFL. They know it's a dangerous thing. But the other side of it is, you got it. You know, when you start seeing this, you understand why they're trying to do something.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's perhaps why John Mara suggested the end of kickoffs, which we used to talk about. Vic used to sit here, and he wanted to get rid of it for a completely different reason. He didn't like the kicking game. He said, just put the ball at the 20 and let's go, because that's old school. But the fact is, now they really are talking about it, and Mara, you know, threw the first, you know, indicator up that don't be surprised when this happens. But how much else can you really do?
There's obviously a limit. I mean, Jeff, you played, so I'll leave it to you. If there's things rules-wise that can be done, but it does stand to reason that when you're playing the game at the speed these guys are playing it, you're going to have head injuries.
Sure, and I like the rules now. I mean, now they're very cautious, mm-hmm. and they should be, you know, because, I mean, they just don't know, right? You know, and that's a scary thing. You know, it makes me worry.
Have you ever had any post-concussion syndromes in the 10 years you've been out?
I had one when I was with the Jets, and I remember that was really the first time that I had memory issues in the weeks following, and light sensitivity. And the athletic trainer at the time, his name was Bob Reese, and he backed me off of any contact. But, you know, I mean, a lot of times that's got to be a two-way street. The player has to give the symptoms so that, you know, a correct, you know, diagnosis can be made and a follow-up treatment plan.
But in the 10 years that you've been here working with us on the radio, I've heard you talk about your shoulder, and I think you had back spasms, and there's times when your knee, but I've never heard you talk about a headache or anything related to a concussion. Do you know if you've ever had a symptom that you could tie into it? A headache, or other than the memory loss from that one Jets game?
Well, I mean, there's things that you think, but you just don't know.
Right.
You know, I mean, how do you really know? You know, is it just, you know, hey, I'm in my mid-40s and I'm having one of those moments, right, you know, where you just forget, or is it related to what you did for 10 years? Right. You just don't know.
Sure.
And the obvious side of it, too, that, you know, we talked about some last fall when Maurice made some comments. You know, a lot of times players, you know, well, this is a self-preservation game. This is a game where guys want to play. Players don't always share, like you said, Jeff. Players, their instinct is to want to play. So there's a constant push and pull that I don't know that the league ever solves this issue. I mean, I don't think it's a solvable issue. But, again, I keep going back. When you see things like this, you certainly see why it is more and more of a front burner issue.
Well, and we saw it firsthand last year. I mean, the Cleveland game, you know, 5-6 games out from the end of the season, Matt Roth suffers the concussion, Clint Sessions suffers the concussion, and they both go on IR.
Mm-hmm.
And in talking to people around here, I mean, that was very much this is a player that we want to have around here for a while. We got to shut him down. Can't take the risk on that.
You know, and the player's reaction, you know, the guys that are already in the pros and the guys that are in colleges, is to want to protect that information. What I mean by that is that if a player gets tabbed as having head-related problems in his history, medical history,
his
all of a sudden
agent value drops.
Yeah, his value drops dramatically.
And it's going to drop more
and draft status-wise. So that's the kind of crazy thing about these head injuries. And I know that, you know, we're making a lot of generalizations here off of what happened with Junior Seau.
Right.
We don't know. But it certainly makes you think.
All right, let's take a break. This portion of Jaguars This Week was brought to you by our friends at Football Fanatics. Sexton, Lagerman, Osher, and crew here with you on Jaguars Radio. Well, Aetna's mobile app lets you view claims and access your family's medical history anytime, anywhere. And Aetna's payment estimator lets you see and compare costs ahead of time. Try them out at Aetna.com. Aetna, no more. Get better. Brian Sexton, Jeff Loggeman, John Osher, Joe Fortunato, John Dineen, our whole crew here with you. Phone lines are open and beginning to ring here at 355-NFL-1. Obviously, lots of storylines. Justin Blackmon, they get the pass rusher in Branch, and the punter, Brian Anger. And Mike joins us first from the north side with a thought on Aaron Campman. Hello, Mike. Welcome to the show.
Hey, good evening, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, listen, I just wanted to see if you guys could just kind of give an update on Aaron Campman. And maybe what you think his role might be coming up this season.
I'll be honest.
If he does make it to the active roster.
can't find an update on him. No one really knows.
Well, I talked with him, the voluntary camp that they had, and asked him how he was feeling. And he said, you know, ascending. He said he felt better than ever, and felt like that he was on the good road, you know, and that road was going to lead to him being able to be back fully. But, you know, as I was talking with him, I was sitting there thinking to myself, you know, it's now at the point where it's a show me thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, where he has to be on the field in pads and earn that roster spot.
I think everybody, including Aaron, deep down gets that.
Sure.
I mean, there's no way it can be. I think right now, the Jaguars are realistically looking at Campman as if he's on the field, it's a huge bonus.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think they're in a situation where they are throwing the depth chart on the wall and saying this is where Aaron Campman's going to play.
No, because they don't know.
Right.
They won't know until they get to camp.
They want him to, you know, but you don't know.
And hopefully you can start to see some signs when they have the OTAs, you know, the mandatory mini camp, which is going to come
in June.
When all the college players are all eligible to practice, because a lot of them have to wait until the college graduation ends. But, you know, hopefully you'll get an idea of that. And then in the ensuing OTAs, and then that'll give you some kind of, you know, hope, I guess you could say, going into training camp.
And I'd be surprised if he's not on the roster in training camp, and I don't see any reason for him not to be at this point. And I think you have him go to camp, and I think for those 2 or 3 weeks and during preseason, you hope against hope that he's Aaron Campman.
And
if he's not, you figure something out.
And I would think that, I mean, you've got a guy who does not have a low cap number, is going to be very closely watched in all of training camp, and he's got to show something. I mean, yeah, every player has to show something. I mean, that's just the way the business is.
Right.
But certainly there's going to be a lot of eyes on him, watching him closely in camp.
Well, since we're talking about defensive end, let's talk. And we talked ad nauseum on draft night about Justin Blackmon, and you've written about him. So let's deal with Branch, the youngster from Clemson. Looks like a guy, long, you know, has long features. I saw a couple of games of his, and relentless. Looked a little bit like, I dare say it, like Tony Brackens athletically.
Yeah, I mean, he's got, you know, what Joe Cullen terms quick twitch. And you've got to have that, you know, to play the position. And, you know, Aaron Campman's not a quick twitch guy, but he's a strong guy, and he's kind of a different type of player. But, you know, as a right end, which is what I think where they're projecting him to play at, I mean, you've got to have speed. He's got speed. He's, you know, a 4'6", 40 type of guy. He's a little longer, leaner than a Jeremy Mincy. You know, his reported weight is around, you know, 258, 260, somewhere in that range, which is, hey, if you can – you can play that position at right end all day long at 260, 258.
The play that I saw him make was against Virginia Tech, and he came off the right side, and he pushed and he pushed and he pushed on the pocket, and then all of a sudden just kind of went over the top of the pile to get the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, they were losing their feet, and it was a very athletic move. Seems like the kind of guy they haven't had around here.
You get double-digit sacks in college, you know, at ACC, SEC, you've done something. You know, so some of the personal things I like about him, you know, team captain, you know, and I know that a lot of people say, well, what does that mean? It means that, you know, he's a good guy. He works hard. He's earned the right to be a captain. I mean, you like that, you know, so I like what I've seen. I, like you, watched, you know, some video of the guy playing, you know, probably on YouTube is where I saw it. And he certainly has got some skills. He's got speed, and hopefully he's a productive player, because that's a premium position, and you need productivity to be a successful team.
I remember when I started covering the NFL, and Jeff, I was fortunate enough to cover you, and you taught me a lot about the defensive end position. Since talking to you when you played, I've always been of the belief that defensive end is very, very hard to come in and learn. It's one of the two or three positions that are hard. Even if this guy's very good, it's going to be hard. Why? Why is it hard to play its position as a rookie?
It's because it's a learned craft. You know, a lot of guys in college just get by on talent alone. I mean, Tony Brackens is a perfect example. You know, Tony Brackens, when he came here, immense talent. I mean, speed, strength, quick twitch, everything that you could ask for. Smart guy. But it took him, not long, but it took him a little while to figure out that just having those things wasn't good enough. You know, you have to have moves. I mean, Bruce Smith, Reggie White, they all had moves, counter moves, and what I used to call the power move. And so it's a craft. You know, you have to learn how to set guys up. You have to learn how to read offensive linemen. There's so much more to it than just putting your hand on the ground and trying to have a good get off on the snap. Anticipation. All those things go into it. I think it's one of the most difficult positions to develop. not like quarterback, which to me is the hardest by far, but it's one of the most difficult.
But it's a position that you often see guys, and I don't have any stats in front of me, but it just seems like you always see guys with 3 sacks their first year and then 13 their second. You know, you often see guys make a huge jump. And I've always been told it's for the reason you talk about, it's just hard as a rookie.
Hey, you know, Branch was going against guys that have – a lot of guys that have no chance of playing in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you get to that level, and all of a sudden a 330-pound guy has feet like Tony Boselli and would condition with linebackers. I mean, all of a sudden that's the type of athlete that you're dealing with at left tackle, and not so much right tackle, but still a heck of a lot higher level than at the college game.
355-NFL-1. Bob is in Ponte Vedra up next. Hello, Bob. Welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. How you doing this evening?
Enjoy good.
The show.
Thank you.
Hey, I think we're taking away from the fact with, you know, focusing on this punter, this was essentially a defensive draft. You know, yeah, well, they got Justin Blackmon, and that solidified the receiving core, but five of the six guys taken were defensive players.
No, it was, and you could make an argument that the punter is a defensive weapon as well. I mean, you know, punting is a field position deal, and, you know, he's going to help the defense out. So I'm looking forward to watching the camp this week, you know, the rookie mini camp. And this is going to be a little bit different than what we've seen in years past because of the amount of numbers.
Yeah, none of the 90-man roster is here.
And I've taken a lot of questions this week about this same topic, defensive draft. And I get that, but the reality is you're really looking for quick impact in the draft from your first three, maybe your first four guys. So those last three, yes, they were defensive players, but you're usually drafting in the fifth, sixth, and seventh round for maybe a starter in his third year, quick special teams impact. So in terms of trying to impact the roster this year, they got a pass rusher, wide receiver, and a punter. I mean, so it's been criticized by some as a, you know, too defensive draft, but they addressed the big need on offense, which is receiver.
And let me just correct one thing. I went in and sat down with Gene Smith today just to get some clarification because, you know, rookie minicamp that's going to have, what, how many guys?
50.
50 guys, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, 14,
27 workup guys.
Right at 50.
50.
Is that right? Okay, 50 guys. Yeah, John was right. Just wanted to make sure. But they have a hard 90, and 23 of those 90, which, you know, that's a hard roster number mm-hmm. now, but 23 of those guys will be here this weekend.
Correct.
Because your undrafted free agent rookies that are signed, they count towards that 90, and then the draft picks count towards that 90 this year, which is different than in years past. Because remember, back in the old days.
They will be here.
Yeah, they will be here.
And they count on the 90. Okay.
And they count a part of the 90. So that's a little different. Say it was 80, and then your draft picks and rookie free agents, I guess in the past they didn't count. This year it's a little different. You have a hard 90, so the number has increased by 10, but your draft picks automatically count towards that 90, and then your signed undrafted rookies count towards that number. So,
but they're the only ones. The rookies are the only ones from the 90. That will be at this camp this week.
Yeah, but then you have 7 street free agents, which are, and I got all these numbers from Gene, so I would be correct tonight. So at this rookie minicamp, you'll have your 6 draft picks, 17 signed undrafted rookies, and then 20 undrafted workout basis only guys.
And some of those are veterans.
And, well, no, those, and that's 20 workout basis
rookies.
And then you have 7 street free agent workout basis, which could, you know,
Jordan
that's
Palmer.
That's right.
Yeah, they could be as veterans because they weren't with a team. Yeah.
So
try to explain the details, but yes, Jeff's right.
Yeah, so looking forward to watching because this is a little different than in years past because in years past, the workout guys, the numbers from talking to Gene were, you know, 5, 6, maybe 7, something like that. And then now all of a sudden you have that number come in 20 that are workout basis guys.
All right, we're quickly to the bottom of the hour here. 30 more minutes of Jaguars This Week presented by Aetna. Live from Everbank Field in Jacksonville when we return on Jaguars Radio.
He has the Emmys.
Welcome back. Jaguars This Week, Wednesday following the draft. Brian Sexton, Jeff Loggeman, and John Osher. All right, so here we go. Punting time. And I'm punting off to you first.
Well, a lot of people, it was funny because, you know, I mean, the day after, everybody's like, a punter? A punter in the third round, I was like, hey, if he's a weapon, then absolutely. And I know you've got some draft picks that have happened in the third round for a team that might have a lot of people would go,
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the third round, it's very interesting. But I do want to point out that did you watch the Niners-Saints playoff game? I mean, if you just need a reminder of what a weapon can be, right? Drew Brees, 422 yards, 300-yard receivers, and the reason they turned the ball over, but one of the big reasons why they lost, that day Andy Lee averaged 49.5 yards on 8 punts and put 4 of them down inside the 20. So Drew Brees had to come from deep inside his own 20.
Had to drive length of the field.
But yeah, exactly. And the scoring percentage drops precipitously when you're beginning a drive inside your 20-yard line.
And the story I've told several times since this draft, 09 playoff game, I watched Seifert, I always forget his first name, from the Chargers.
Steve.
And literally single-handedly beat the Colts in a wild card game.
Mm-hmm.
Average, I think it was like 51 yards a punt, pinned him back. Every Colts staffer player, you know, the entire offseason talked about how the punter beat us. Now, obviously there's things you can do to counter that, but in the playoffs, in big situations, it can make a difference. Does that make it worth a third round pick? We won't know until it plays out, but you know, while we've all seen it make the difference.
And a lot of people, I think, are going to be very critical of everything that Brian Anger does because he was a third round pick, you know, and I don't want to remind people, hey, look, he didn't draft himself.
Sure.
You know, he's a young player. He's going to be a rookie just like any other rookie punter. You know, so don't all of a sudden the boo birds break out because he has a punt that only goes 35 yards.
And I don't think that – my experience with Jacksonville fans, I don't think you're going to see a lot of that. Now, obviously, if he's terrible for 3 years, you would. But I don't think you're going to see a lot of blaming him for the pick.
From what I hear, you're going to be able to hear.
Looking forward to it.
His foot and his leg out of the gate when training camp starts. And for us, this weekend, when the mini camp starts.
It is striking the confidence level and the enthusiasm that the front office does have over the pick. And obviously they would have taken him in the third round. But in talking to him, it's not really a defensive posture. It's more of a, you know, just wait. You'll see, you know, and, you know, if it the bottom line on the draft is if the first two picks work out and are second contract guys and the punter is a 8 or 9 year guy who pushes for the Pro Bowl.
Worth every
It'll
bit
be the best draft we've ever had.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because, you know, you go back when you look at Brian Anger on the video that you can get online, anybody can get it, and you watch his kicking style, it reminds me a lot as far as the leg of Reggie Roby. Because the leg gets so high up and is still straight at the highest point. Obviously, Reggie Roby was an inconsistent punter at times because he dropped the ball from way up high.
But what a cannon.
But what a cannon for leg. Whereas Brian, when he drops it, the drop point is not so high. It's lower. But the leg is like Reggie Roby in that it just, woof. You know, so I'm looking forward to hearing it, what they're talking about. Wait till you hear him punt.
I watched a punt in the East-West Shrine Bowl, which was indoors over in Tampa. It was at the Tropicana Field where the Rays play. And the line of scrimmage was the 39, but he kicked from the 28, and it landed 10 yards deep in the end zone. And that's an 80-yard kick in the air. And I want to point out, at a big-screen TV, the ball was never in view until it hit the ground.
I think the biggest point with the, you know, in terms of why in the world would they make that pick, and you can argue the point as much as you want. They looked at this in the third round, looked at their roster, and anybody else they would have drafted, they felt like they were drafting a backup. They felt like this guy is going to make an immediate impact. Now, as I said on a couple of radio shows already this week, you can argue the logic of that point all you want, but that was a big part of the reason.
Yeah, but you can't argue that he was the best punter in the draft.
No, no question.
So,
and most, you know, I always take whatever draft digests say with a grain of salt, but there were a lot of third or fourth round grades on the guy, and there were a lot of people who thought he was one of the top 120 players in the draft, and there were others that thought he was a little higher than that. So, again, it's going to be debated. We're not going to sit here and change minds over the pick, but from everything you hear in the front office, we're not going to have to change minds for long.
Well, and, hey, they do the work. We don't get to do the work like
right.
They do. And they've always said, you have to trust in your board. And To me, if you have that, you know, conviction, then do it. Absolutely do it.
And say this for him. They've got conviction, because there's no way before the pick they didn't know they was going to get criticized.
Sure.
And the one thing you say about this front office that's been striking in the 2 years I've dealt with them, they will pick who they believe. And there's something to be said for that, because the flip side of it, and what you never want, is a front office that's picking because of fear of the reaction over the pick.
I just remember that the team that I played for before, the New York Jets, their front office actually had the PR guy sit in on personnel and draft meetings and had input.
And it, as silly as that sounds, it's not that uncommon, and it is a tragically flawed way to go.
Can't do that.
Yeah.
Can't do that.
Here's the part that got me. Everyone was saying that the Jaguars couldn't possibly get value for that pick. But how in the world can you make that statement unless you know what their value board is? You can't. So just for fun, right? And you choose from this what you want. And it does show both ways in one case, at least. I took what I thought were, you know, three or four of the best drafting teams in the NFL and went back the last 5 years. Giants have won two Super Bowls over that period, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we'll start with them.
I would think Green Bay, New York Giants, New England Patriots.
Three of the most successful
teams.
And I added Steelers and Ravens, because I think if you look at them historically, they're really good drafters, okay? So the Giants, here are their third-round picks from 2007 through 2011. Last year, Jarrell Jernigan, a wide receiver from Troy. With that wide receiving group, it was just a backup, right?
Yeah, don't know him.
In 2010, they took a safety from LSU, Chad Jones. He was in a pretty serious car wreck in 2010. He's never played, though he's remained part of their team.
Mm-hmm.
2009, they took Ramsey's Barton, big receiver from Cal Poly, big 6'6 guy. 15 catches over 3 years. They did have a star, well, a very good player, Mario Manningham, a star catching the Super Bowl. So that's a good third-round pick.
He's not there anymore.
No,
he wasn't worth re-signing.
Right, left in free agency. And in 2007, they drafted a defensive tackle from Penn State, Jay Alford, off the roster. Right? Okay. So that's a third round. Now, you look at the Steelers. The Steelers last year took a cornerback from Texas, Curtis Brown, played in special teams. In 2010, they took a wide receiver from SMU, Emmanuel Sanders, who in 2 years has 50 catches and four touchdowns. Backup. They took a guard from Wisconsin, Craig Urbick, off the roster. But now here's a star. They took Mike Wallace in the third round from Ole Miss. He's a star. Bruce Davis off the roster. Matt Spaeth, the tight end from Minnesota, off the roster. So from 1, 2, 3, 4, from 6 picks, they got one star player.
And how many picks do the Giants have?
5, and they got
We got 11 picks, and two of them you'd say, yeah.
Right, okay. Now, Packers, they changed it a little bit here. Last year, they took a running back from Hawaii, special teams guy, Alex Green. They took a safety in 2010 from Georgia Tech, Morgan Burnett, starter, 107 tackles. But that defense really was not very good last year.
Mm-hmm.
He made a lot. I don't know how good of a player he is. Someone would need to tell me.
Don't know.
Because I haven't seen him. They got a starter on their offensive line this year, third year in, T.J. Lang, is a guard. Now a star, right? Jermichael Finley, star tight end. James Jones, they had two third-round picks in 2007. James Jones has averaged 37 catches. No, I take that back. James Jones had 37 catches and four touchdowns last year. So
good numbers.
Right, okay.
Yeah,
so
pretty good.
And then
there.
They had a safety, Aaron Rouse, who's off the roster. And then I'll give you here's the Patriots. Last year they took Ryan Mallett and Stephen Ridley. Ridley's a backup, so is Mallett, obviously. In 10 they took Taylor Price, the wide receiver who's here with a broken foot. 09 they took a linebacker from USF. He's off the roster. In 2008 they took Kevin O'Connell, a backup quarterback. He's off the roster. They drafted out of the round in 7 and just finish it up. The Ravens last year took Ja Reed, an offensive tackle from UCF. Didn't play. 2 years ago, they took Ed Dixon, a tight end from Oregon. His average 32 catches and 3 touchdowns in 2 years. Good player. Last year, or 09, Ladarius Webb from Nicholls State became a starter last year when Dominic Foxworth went down. And then from that point out, Tom Zbogowski, O'Neal Cousins, Tavares Gooden, Yamone Figures, a bunch of third-round picks all off the roster. Then there's another. They got Marshall Yanda, who's a third-year starter. So, you know, they've come out with one really good offensive lineman and one pretty good tight end.
Mm-hmm.
And one point that you should make, too, I got a lot of questions this week talking about why doesn't Gene value the third round more? And you can make an argument that he's probably picked better in the third round than any other, you know, Cox,
here are his
Knighton.
Picks. Right.
You know, so they've gotten value of the throw. I mean, clearly they don't consider this a throwaway
Rackley
round.
And DeAnthony Smith.
So, again, it's easy to pick apart individual picks. His philosophy is they want quality out of this round. They've gone after quality in the past, so it remains to be seen, but it stands to reason that they went after quality again this year. So again, we're not going to change people's mind about the value of the punter, but I think in time it will not be viewed as a tragic pick.
When people start seeing him bouncing up off of that big screen thing in Dallas, yeah, they might say, oh, okay, I like that.
And I go back to the Colts game last year, and it was a very close game until late in the ball game, in large part because their punter, the kid from West Virginia, McAfee,
had a phenomenal game.
And he was putting the ball so deep that you had the 32nd ranked offense that was struggling to move it. If they had gotten the ball at the 45-yard line a couple of times, you know, they might have opened it up a little bit more against an undermanned Colts team.
And they went out and drafted McAfee after that 0-9 game I talked about.
There you go.
Yeah, so.
All right, we'll take a break. One more segment to go, Jaguars This Week. Back after this. All right, 7 or 8 minutes left in our program this evening. Sexton Lagerman Osher with you here, 355-NFL-1, 800-355-6351. Got a little time for a phone call here or there. What else, what do you want to say about some of these other kids? The linebacker from Nevada, the defensive back from Florida State, and the kid from Ashland, Jairus Pendleton.
As long as you don't have to talk punter anymore, I don't know what we're talking about.
I'm kind of surprised that we haven't heard more vitriol about it.
Well, I'm
about the punter.
Yeah, I mean, I saw a lot of it on Twitter.
I'll forward you some emails. Yeah. How about that?
You need some.
You want some vitriol?
Here you go.
I just thought we might get a little bit of it tonight.
I got you.
I'm looking forward to watching Brandon Marshall, the outside linebacker from Nevada. You know, because I mean, it's a smaller school, and a lot of the scouts and the analysts really kind of grade the school, which Gene Smith doesn't believe in.
Yeah, they like him.
You know,
they like him.
And I think that position last year is obviously the frontline guy is fantastic. But once you got past them, it wasn't very competitive. And I think with the addition of him, and then they've got two undrafted guys that they feel very, very confident about, I think that position will get more competitive because it needs to be more competitive.
What about the defensive backfield? Just not related to the draft. I heard good things about Aaron Ross from what people have seen.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Derek Cox played well last year before he got hurt there in that stretch. And where do you see Rasheen Mathis being ready or not when training camp opens?
I don't know if he'll be ready for training camp. I'd be surprised if he's not getting ready sometime in that September 15th window that range.
You know, and I think everybody's different. I mean, you go back to remember when T.O. came back from his, you know, knee. Holy cow. He had a knee, right?
Yeah, he did.
I mean, and came back fast. Jerry Rice came back fast. I mean, so certain people have come back very fast. Everybody is different.
And players always feel good about it. But I know from talking to Rasheen once for a story and just a couple times seeing him, he feels very good about it. Now, I've never talked to a player that doesn't, but, you know, he certainly looks, when you see him walking around, looks like a guy who feels good about where he is.
I've been through that injury, and I remember working back, and you think you're back.
Sure.
You know, you're doing your conditioning stuff, and then all of a sudden you get on the field, and then it's what I call the unanticipated movement, the reactionary movement is just not the same. But then all of a sudden you wake up one day, and you're like, you don't even think about it. You know, it just happens. It's there.
Right.
You know, so hopefully it works well with Rasheen. You know, he's not a 23, 24-year-old like I was when I went through it. You know, obviously younger people heal faster, but hopefully his body is you know, one that heals fast. You know, but that whole position group, I like where it's at. You know, and if all of a sudden you find a gem in Mike Harris, you know, the Florida State guy, but even if you don't find a gem, I mean, you're solid at that.
From where they were 2 years ago.
Yeah, Cox is healthy.
Yeah, that's it.
They're solid.
He's working. So let's grab Josh on the south side quickly here in the last 4 or 5 minutes of the show. Josh, welcome.
Hey, thanks, guys. Great show. You guys do better covering the Jaguars than anybody else. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hey, I have a question. You guys have covered it, and everybody else has covered the punter in the third round. My question is, and I haven't heard anybody talk about this, was it possible, there was a lot of trading going on right around us. Was it not possible for us to trade back, pick up a pick, and then make the punter pick?
No, they couldn't get back.
Told that, too, that it was not possible. They tried.
They did try. Okay. All right.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question.
Yeah, it's very,
People are making assumptions. Well, you could have got him later. Well, no one knows that. I mean, if this guy is really that good, probably not. But they did try to get back and make something happen. And when they couldn't, and we talked about this before the draft, sometimes you stand and you take your man.
You get, if you like a guy, you got to take him. You just, because you don't want to, the last thing you want as a GM is 2 years later to know you liked the guy and you had a great feeling about him and to see him playing somewhere else. Mm-hmm. At some point, you got to take the guy you like.
I'm looking for this guy. There's a scout. You see this Move the Chains? Peter King and Chris Mortensen were retweeting him earlier today. He's a guy who's a good scout. He's leaving the Eagles organization to go do something media-wise. And I was just looking on Twitter earlier, just randomly saw this, but what he said was, and here I'm going to pull it up, because I retweeted it, two things. One, if Cal didn't foolishly ask Anger to rugby punt so much, his average would have been much higher. Like, this is not a guy in the Jaguars organization. He was in the Eagles organization until very recently. And then Peter King retweets him and says, argue about the decision to take a punter that early, but Anger was the best punter I've ever evaluated.
So yeah, strong. I've heard that from several. Yeah,
yeah, that's, from several people.
That's the buzz. Now he's got to kick up to buzz.
Yeah, I mean that's right. Yeah, that's the key. He's got to come in and do it. But
sure,
you know, I watching him, I'm not the talent evaluator, but watching him, that's a big man.
I haven't heard that many fans upset that there's a punter
or a good one.
Right. It's just the round, and that's always going to be the debate. I'm sorry,
well,
Jeff.
Well, and a lot of people have that opinion because that's what, you know, the analysts on television, sure, whether it be ESPN or NFL Network, all saying. I mean, that's, hey, look, is a punter ever worth a third round pick? You're darn right. If he can flip the field and be a weapon, absolutely. See Matt Turk.
You know, and that,
do we have to?
You are so right. That and that has gotten lost in this equation. And before that, you know, Adam Potlatch was a pretty good punter. Pretty good. He had a couple years there with the coverage guys, though, Montel Owens and Kasim Osgood, where this team was really good at putting the ball down deep.
And Gene said several times this weekend, a significant grade up in terms of length, in terms of leg strength from Podlish. Well, I was not trying to criticize Adam, but just said this is a different thing.
Well, looking forward to hearing him kick, and I'm
hearing him kick.
Looking forward to seeing Jarris Pendleton too, the seventh round pick. You know, Ashland, and you try to get information on him, and obviously you read John Osher to get kind of a background on what Jarris Pendleton has got, because you can't find it anywhere. I mean, when you played Ashland,
right?
You know, but the one thing that I did read is that going to Ashland was because, I mean, he, I guess, was a D1 prospect, Michigan State,
yes,
at one point.
7, 8, 9 years ago, and then he, you know, admit it, sort of got sidetracked 4 or 5 years. But this kid was a big-time athletic guy coming out of high school and just got sidetracked. So, I mean, this is always a fun weekend for that reason. A lot of stories, and, you get a chance to get your eyes on these guys for the first time.
Yeah, and then after this weekend, read plenty of Johnny O at Jaguars.com because Johnny O will be covering the rookie minicamp like nobody else.
There you go. All right, guys, thanks so much. We'll talk to you next week right here on Jaguars This Week.